From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The Enoch Pratt Central Library was designed 9 decades ago to beckon passersby and not alienate them from the knowledge within its walls. Now, after a sweeping renovation, there will be a huge party this weekend to welcome visitors back and celebrate its grand reopening. We talk with Heidi Daniel, president and CEO of the Pratt, about how libraries are changing.
One of the pieces that's very important to me in terms of the role of the library in the communities is that we don't sit in our buildings and wait for the neighborhood to come to us, but that we're constantly engaged in being part of the neighborhood wherever people are.
Plus, Carla Dupre, executive director of City Lit Project, talks about the books that have changed her life. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. In 1882, upon gifting $1 million to Baltimore City to create a library system, Enoch Pratt said, quote, "My library shall be for all, rich and poor, without distinction of race or color, who, when properly accredited, can take out the books if they will handle them carefully and return them," close quote. The citizens of Baltimore have been doing just that ever since. And by 1894, the Pratt Library System held the fourth largest collection in the country. Fast forward to this Saturday, September 14th, the Enoch Pratt Free Library Central Branch, which opened in 1933, will celebrate the completion of its $115 million renovation. Later in the show, we'll share some book recommendations, books you can check out at one of the 22 Enoch Pratt branches across Baltimore. Joining us now is Heidi Daniel, Enoch Pratt president and CEO, to talk about the Central Library renovation and what's been happening during her first 2 years on the job. Before coming to Baltimore, Daniel was director of Ohio's Youngstown and Mahoning County System of Libraries, where she was named Ohio Librarian of the Year. Welcome to On the Record, Heidi.
Thanks for having me.
You've been involved in libraries for much of your career. How have you seen the role of the library evolve?
I think the role of the library has evolved from a place where people were coming in and taking out books and materials and taking them home. And sort of the interaction in the library was limited to activities around that collection specifically. And so we've switched from a place where it was very transactional to a place that is more about the building of community and using those resources in a much broader way to build community. So from a place that was much more transactional to a place that's much more about community, from taking out books to what's happening within the building and within the neighborhood.
One initiative you've implemented since taking the helm at Enoch Pratt is fine-free system for overdue books. That seems counterintuitive. How does that work?
It does seem counterintuitive to many people, but it's actually worked quite well. What we've discovered is when we started looking at other library systems who had abolished fines, and there have been many, and even, you know, for decades, there's been a few sort of renegades who were out there saying, "I'm not sure if fines are working." And here at the Pratt, when we started looking at it, no one could point me to any definitive research that showed that fines actually resulted in the return of materials. And
I
think people think, "Oh, well, if I fine you, you will bring that book back and it will make you a more responsible person." But what we saw when we delved into our specific research was that the neighborhoods where we were trying to have the highest impact also had the highest amount of blocked cards. So they might not have the most fines. Some neighborhoods may have high fines, but they were a wealthier neighborhood. And so their fines were paid quickly and people went about their business. It didn't result in anyone returning the book sooner, but maybe they would keep it a little longer and pay the fine. But the neighborhoods where we wanted to really create change and encourage usage of our materials, they tended to have a high number of blocked cards. So, for example, our
Pennsylvania... And a card gets blocked
was getting blocked at $10. So once fines and fees had accrued past $10, a person's card would be blocked. And to many people, $10 may be, you know, nothing. But for other people, it may be a choice between a meal or access to the library, or a bus trip or access to the library. And we certainly did not want to be forcing people to make that decision. You know, there's a lot of research that points to the fact that poor communities are taxed more. And this seemed to be sort of in line with that. We were just implementing taxes on neighborhoods where people could afford it the least. So we decided that that was really counterintuitive to the mission and to the purpose and to, you know, what Mr. Pratt said when he founded the library. And the research from other libraries showed that both circulation and return of materials tended to increase once fines were abolished.
Increase. Mm-hmm. Return of materials increased.
Yeah, mm-hmm, absolutely. And in fact, that is what we have seen. So many of our branches had pretty steady decline of circulation over the last 10 years. And that was concerning to the board. So one of the things we thought we could try immediately was letting go of fines. And I think to put it in perspective, you have to realize that fine collection represents less than 0.25% of our budget. So it was letting go of very little money, nothing that would impact us.
You've also extended hours
we
at
have.
Several branches.
Yes.
What impact has that had?
So we've had a 30% increase in hours, and that was thanks to funding from both the state and the city. And that's allowed us to stabilize our hours across the city. So we had a lot of branches where one branch would be closed on Monday and another branch would be closed on Friday. Now everyone's open. Hours are pretty substantially the same across the system, with the exception of Pennsylvania Avenue, Southeast Anchor, and Central, who have 4 late nights a week now instead of just 2. We extended their hours for 4 nights.
So, and late night
meaning
extends
into the evening. So Pennsylvania Avenue and Southeast Anchor are open 10 to 8, 4 nights, 4 days a week. Central is 10 to 7, 4 days a week. We made them consistent, which is easier for people to remember, obviously. Yeah.
Most recently, Enoch Pratt teamed up with Libraries Without Borders for the Wash and Learn initiative. Tell us about that.
So this initiative takes technology into laundromats. We're in 4 laundromats across the city, and our librarians are providing classes and digital equity training for folks in those laundromats. So in between, you know, putting their clothes in the wash and putting their clothes in the dry, they can come over and learn how to do maybe job searching skills or researching health information. Whatever it is that they're interested in on the computer, our staff can walk them through how to do it.
How widespread is that?
So 4 laundromats right now, 2 with library staffing. And we're sort of monitoring this as a pilot to see how it's working and whether or not we'll expand to more locations with Libraries Without Borders. But we're also looking for our own purposes into the future, how we expand the programs and classes we do in libraries into other community settings where people are. So one of the pieces that's very important to me in terms of the role of the library in the communities is that we don't sit in our buildings and wait for the neighborhood to come to us, but that we're constantly engaged in being part of the neighborhood wherever people are.
So besides laundromats, what do you have your eye on?
Well, I like to tell my staff I have my eye on any place where I see people waiting for any period of time that we could be engaging with them, or where people are naturally gathering. So whether it be, you know, recreation centers, other community hubs, we've talked a lot about people waiting in jury duty, you know, to be called for jury duty. We're throwing around a lot of places right now where we might possibly have partnerships or natural connections. And certainly if anyone's listening and interested in the library exploring a partnership with you, we're kind of open for business right now.
That's Enoch Pratt, President and CEO, Heidi Daniel, here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about initiatives in the Pratt Library System. In 2018, Enoch Pratt Free Library was voted one of the 10 nicest places in America by Reader's Digest. This Saturday from noon to 4 p.m., the Pratt Central Library will host an open house and block party to celebrate its renovation being completed. Tell us about the renovation. How long has it been underway? What does it entail?
Well, planning for this renovation has been underway for decades. So there's a lot of visioning that went into this. And obviously, that vision has changed along the way. The building has been amazingly restored to much of the historical details from 1933. On our social media right now, we're posting many pictures that show you what certain spaces looked like in 1933 and what they look like today. And there's a lot of similarities there. It has been amazing to find details on the ceilings that have been long hidden by, boxy fluorescent lighting fixtures that have been painted over, floors that have been cracked, marble that's been broken, and to be able to really restore all of that beauty to the building has been an incredible journey. And then, of course, we've also added a lot of modern amenities. So our teen space is three times the size it was previously. It has an audio video recording studio, an editing booth, a maker space with you could run a whole Etsy shop out of it. You've got T-shirt presses, sewing machines, 3D printers.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we have our job and career center, which will offer classrooms that we can do. People can do one-on-one, job coaching, interview skills, meeting with mentors or coaches. We'll be able to do larger classrooms in sort of a computer lab format in one of the larger classrooms. And, of course, our children's area, too. We restored the Goldfish Pond and added some new amenities, some computers, some classrooms for early learning programs. And we tripled the number of computers throughout the building. So we are both marrying that love of history and the way we feel that it's important to preserve this sort of architectural jewel for the city with making sure it's modernized and able to move into the next century of library service with us.
What's happening at the open house and block party on Saturday?
Well, this is a really thrilling block party because in 1933, when it opened, the library did not have an opening celebration because we were in a depression.
Uh-huh.
So to be able to have this now, for me, feels like a celebration for both 1933 and today. So I'm super excited about it. And we have the Bliss Step team and some slam poets right before the ribbon cutting. The ribbon cutting will take place. We have A1 Chops performing right after that. The full day has authors. We have Laura Lippman. We have Chris Wilson, Dee Watkins. We have Black Cherry Puppet Theater coming for children, as well as Adam Gibowitz. More authors I'm not naming. We have food trucks out front. It's just going to be a fun-filled day, and it's really for everyone. So there's kids' activities, there's adult activities, there's teen activities in the teen room. It's for everyone, and we want the whole city to come out and celebrate with us.
Well, for listeners who may not have stepped into a library recently, what would you say to welcome them back?
I would say, first of all, you need to come in, welcome home, and we literally have something for everyone. There is nothing that the public library can't offer someone. So I always tell people that say, oh, well, I don't know, I don't go to the library. I order my books off Amazon. And I say, well, that's fine, but you're still missing out on the wide range of services we offer, from free online classes, which you can get a digital card and just use our digital services, our free streaming audio, our free streaming movies, all of our programs from small business programming to, arts and crafts, painting, Zumba, health, wellness. I mean, music. We've got something for everyone. There is definitely something for you in our building.
You're a great saleswoman.
Thank you.
Heidi Daniel is president and CEO of the Enoch Pratt Free Library. We've been speaking about Enoch Pratt Central Library Community Open House and Block Party this Saturday from noon to 4 p.m. at 400 Cathedral Street in Baltimore. Ahead of that event on Thursday, September 12th at noon, you can be with WIPR's Midday with Tom Hall when it broadcasts live from the Central Library. We have a link to registration information and to Block Party events at the On the Record page at WIPR.org. I'm Sheila Cass. This is On the Record. After a short break, we ask City Lit Project's Carla Dupre for some of her favorite book recommendations. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about libraries and what lines their shelves. Lots of books. Earlier, we spoke with Enoch Pratt President Heidi Daniel about the block party Saturday to celebrate the grand reopening of the Central Library after a $115 million renovation. Now, Carla Dupre joins us to offer some of her favorite book recommendations. She's an author and executive director of City Lit Project, which hosts the City Lit Festival each April and participates in the Baltimore Book Festival annually. Welcome back to On the Record, Carla.
Thank you. Glad to be here, Sheila.
So before we delve into your recommendations, tell me, is there a book that has really influenced you in some way recently or even when you were young? Is there a book you carry with you in a special way?
It's a little scary because there are so many books. But before I even say that, I have to pay respect to two writers that we lost just recently within days of each other, Toni Morrison and Paul Marshall. They were two literary giants that they walked tall in the Black literary community. Many people didn't know their work, but we knew. And the many tributes that were paid to Toni Morrison especially, it made me want to reread her work because I read her work as an emerging writer. But her work so informed the way I looked at writing, the way I worked at language, getting a character to resonate on the page, that it was like losing family in many ways. Toni Morrison taught us that once, you know, she implored us to tell the story that we needed to tell in the way that we needed to tell it, and that once it was written, it no longer belonged to us. She had a bit of magical realism to her work, underpinnings of myth to her work. You know, her work, Song of Solomon, Sula, Beloved. She's just an incredible writer whose conversation about race was unparalleled. Paul Marshall, Brown Girl, Brownstone was a book that I just put in every writer's hands that I knew of. She taught me the power of creating an image of a character that would sit for you forever. There's no mistaking the power struggles between mother and daughter relationships that showed up in her work. I'm reminded of a kitchen table storytelling scene in which one of Paul's characters speaks to Sila, Selena's mother. She says, "Talk your talk, Sila. In this white man world, you got to take your mouth and make a gun."
Oh,
just powerful kind of writing. I think of Mama Day by Gloria Naylor, Into Zaki Shang for colored girls who have considered suicide when the rainbow was enough, The Color Purple, even works like Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky, or All Quiet on the Western Front, which taught me about the horrifics of the ways of war. But there are many, many works that influenced me as a writer. And thank God for libraries, right?
Yeah.
Because that's where I got a lot of my books.
What role did the library play in your community growing up?
Let me say this. I was a military brat. We traveled all over the world. I shouldn't say the world, the country. It seemed like the world, but out of country too. But at one point in time, my mother decided she did not want to uproot us. So we landed in a small planned community called Willingboro, New Jersey, where there was no public transportation, one middle school, one high school. And our basis for entertainment was the library.
Basis for entertainment?
Yes. We walked a good mile and a half to the library, my sisters and I, carrying an armful of books. And I recall one day when I was scouring the shelves, I landed on the bottom shelf, and that's where I discovered Black poets.
Ah.
I did not know they existed. I was in sixth grade. I was on my bare knees, and I sat there for hours, and I learned about Sonia Sanchez, Caroline Rogers. I read the work of Lucille Clifton, who would become my friend. Sonia Sanchez would become my wintergreen sister, Don Howe Lee. And I tell you, at that moment, I knew my life was transformed and that I would be a poet. And that all I could think about is it took till sixth grade for me to find someone that looked like me on the page. And it changed my life. And the library did that for me. So libraries are home to me. It's a place that you just can embrace your life and embrace your work. It's just someplace you can be.
Now, onto your recommendations. What what's on your current reading list?
I'm currently reading Jeannie Vinasco's book, Things We Didn't Talk About When I Was a Girl. It's a memoir about breaking the silence of good boys doing horrific things. And whose shame is it anyway? It's a cultural discussion about rape. And I found reading it, I remember going to college. I remember being in a room where so many women raised their hands when we talked about who had been sexually violated. But this story explores a little bit about what that time frame looked like and the struggle between what happened and how to dissect this happened by a nice person and what that looks like. I'm also reading Ocean Vuong's debut novel, On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous. It's a poet's take on bridging wounds that span generations. And there's one sentence that I want to share with you. There are no animals here but us. Ooh. So I think about that. I'm rereading Paul Marshall, Brown Girl, Brown Stones, as I mentioned. I'm rereading a lot of Toni Morrison's work because I read her as a young writer. And now I want to see what it looks like from a different perspective with a different lens. I'm reading Mark Nepo. He has a book called The Book of Awakening. It's an old book, Having the Life You Want by Being Present to the Life You Have. When it's time to be still and to take a moment to breathe, I like to read his work, different passages. I think there's so much loss in the air lately that I turn to this work to help ground me and remind me that there is an interior life to nurture. I read poetry, period. Poetry because it gives me life. Poetry because, as a fiction reader, it feeds me. And it doesn't matter if it's a poet I know or a poet I don't know. I just would like to have poetry all around me.
That's Carla Dupre, author and executive director of the City Lit Project, here on The Record on WYPR. This year she was awarded the 3-week Hedgebrook Fellowship, a women's writer's retreat on Whidbey Island in Washington State. What is the next book you want to dip into?
There are many. Get a shout out.
Okay,
let's start.
And I'll tell me a couple.
I'll tell you a couple. Okay, The Nickel Boys by Colson Whitehead. I want to read because I've heard it's not an easy read. It's based on the real story of a reform school in Florida during the Jim Crow South in the early 60s. It says prepare yourself when you read this book. Huh. I want to read In the Country of Women by Susan Strait. She's one of my favorite authors. She published a book called I've Been in Sorrow's Kitchen and Licked Out All the Pots, to quote by Zora Neale Hurston. But I've been following her work ever since. I want to read The Testaments by Canadian author Margaret Atwood. Many of us have read Handmaid's Tale many years ago when it wasn't a thing to read. But the work was chilling at the time, and it's chilling now. But her new work is like a little continuation of the Handmaid's Tale, but in a different vein, I have found. So I'm looking forward to that work. I want to read Red at the Bone by Jacqueline Woodson, who's a young adult author. This is her. This will be an adult book, though. And I quote, she felt red at the bone, like there was something inside of her undone and bleeding. Her work is pure delight. I just ready for the read. I want to read Jason Reynolds' upcoming book called Look Both Ways. It's examined. You can read it two different ways, as a novel or as a short story, so you can read them individually. But it's 15 minutes, an examination of 15 minutes of boys walking home from school and what that looks like. The unsupervised time of kids, I should say, walking home from school and what that might look like. I want to read The Water Dancer by Ta-Nehisi Coates. One, because it's Ta-Nehisi Coates.
For
it's
sure.
Like when he writes, we lean in and we listen, right? So I'm here for it. I like to read Talking to Strangers by Malcolm Gladwell, What We Should Know About the People We Don't Know. I love how he peeps human behavior in a way that's unique and previously unexamined. And we all know strangers, don't we? I want to read The Yellow House by Sarah M. Broom. It's a haunting memoir from a stunning new talent. She's talking about the Hurricane Katrina and how it landed in her life. I also want to shout out some of the regional writers if I can. Rion Amlicher Scott, he has a collection of short stories, The World Doesn't Require You. Marion Winnick, The Big Book of the Dead, it's out in paperback. It's a combination of Glen Rock and the Baltimore Book of the Dead, and a couple additional vignettes. I want to read Tatiana Figueroa Ramirez. She has a chapbook out called Coconut Curls and Cafe con Leche. I want to read Barbara Borland's thriller, Fake Like Me. As you see, there's a ton on my reading list.
And you have a long
list.
Before I let you go, a project you're involved with, One Book Baltimore. Tell us the concept.
The concept of One Book Baltimore is a group of us that have gotten together, and it was facilitated or created by T. Rowe Price. It includes Baltimore Ceasefire, Maryland Humanities, Enoch Pratt Library, City of the Project, and a host of others. But it's so we can engage 8th grade students to read the same book. We provide a reading guide, bookmarks, and a way for parents to engage with the students. What we love about it, it forces students to engage in the text in a very different way, especially when they have a chance to talk to the author. So we're really excited about that book. We hope to launch it October 1st with a series of events surrounding
it. And that's when we'll find out what the choice is for this year.
You'll know. All of Maryland will know. But it's a great project. It's a great way to get kids empowered and reading stories that resonate with them.
Carla, thanks for spending some time with us. Thank you.
I appreciate you.
Carla Dupre is Executive Director of City Lit Project. Will you come back next month to tell us about Brilliant Baltimore, a festival of literature and light that's taking place in early November?
Absolutely.
Can't wait to talk to you about that. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, you can find more information about Carla Dupre's literature picks, as well as the Enoch Pratt Central Library's open house and block party from noon to 4 p.m. this coming Saturday. Also there, how you can sign up to be part of Tom Hall's audience when Midday broadcasts live from the Central Library day after tomorrow at noon. I'm Sheila Cass. This is On the Record. Glad you're with us. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.